Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Bald Move Pulp podcast. We are wrapping up the 1899 season one series on Netflix today. As promised, we've got a feedback roundup and we got some final thoughts on the series, some thoughts on some hot theories. Jim, I guess I'll kick it off to you first. Do you have anything that you want to share with the group?
I do. I want to first say I'm in no way prepared for this podcast, which is to say I did as much reading as I could until my brain melted out of my ears. And no amount of reading would have prepared me for this podcast anyway.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like if we had done all of our homework for season one of Dark, for example, and done the definitive podcast, we couldn't have our wildest dreams guessed where that thing went by season three. So yeah,
we'd be totally wrong.
Yeah. But, you know, it's the game we play.
And it's fun. Well, I like puzzles.
So ring your melted brain puddle out into the microphone.
Oh, yeah. Before we get into that, I wanted to talk about, like, you know, how I guess people who watch this probably have the question, like, how well did it do for Netflix? Are we going to be getting a season two? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did pretty well. Apparently, there were over 80 million hours of watch time, and that set it firmly at number two. On the Netflix top 10 list. They do a top 10 list each week based on watch time. And it was number two behind The Crown, season five, in its first week, I think.
Which is a smash hit for them, I understand.
Yeah, The Crown's very well received. The second week, it was number two behind Wednesday, which is the new Addams Family spinoff thing. But it was way behind Wednesday. Wednesday was absolutely crushing it. It had like 350 million hours of view time, whereas Dark had about 80 million. So
I was not interested in the Wednesday project at all. So
yeah, I'm not super interested either. It's a teen drama set in the Addams Family universe with Wednesday at the center of it. But yeah, it's by all accounts doing very well. I mean, number two on all of Netflix is pretty good. So
has it got an official renewal yet?
That's a good question. With all my reading, I didn't even look to see if it had.
I assume it will. Although I imagine this is kind of an expensive show since they built their own, the volume set and did a bunch of other stuff. But on the other hand, I imagine that like that's a sunk cost and like the volume will probably make each successive season cheaper to make because you essentially don't have to do green screen. You don't have to do post process, anything in post. It's like the camera's got it all. It's got the light. It's got the background.
I actually watched the making of 1899 and they were showing a lot of the volume stuff that they were doing. And it looks like a lot of the upfront investment that they had to do was just getting used to filming in the volume because Odar and Frichet are very like, we like to do everything in camera. We like to do everything as physically as possible. And they were kind of resistant to the idea of using the volume in the first place. And then they saw what it could do and they saw how physical it actually is. It's not like tricks of post-processing and stuff. It's just there. And they were very excited about it. So I think a lot of the upfront investment was just learning how to use the tech. So if they did a season two, it'd probably be a lot faster.
I thought it was interesting that their volume, because I've seen it before, like on The Mandalorian and Loki and whatnot, and it always looks like a big like football field shaped room. This was more like an oval
dome. Yeah, this is like a, they're standing inside a cylinder. It doesn't have a ceiling that's projecting anything. Right. They just have like lighting up there.
Yeah, so it's like a more of a bare bones volume. But it might, like I said, it seemed to work pretty well, stunningly well.
Yeah, they just won't be able to do any like low angle hero shots or anything without doing some post processing.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I'm excited. I think season two is definitely in the cards, whether it's been greenlit or not yet.
Gotcha. What else? Or do you want to take turns talking about things we've learned?
Yeah, sure. You've learned things?
I have. So this is something I mentioned on the podcast that I saw that this book, The Awakening, kept on popping up in the background. And they didn't really explain it. So I did some digging. It's a real book by Kate Chopin, I believe is mm-hmm. how you pronounce his name. And it was written in 1899.
Okay.
And it's about a woman who marries a man from the Deep South and is kind of disaffected. It's known as like one of the first feminist works of note, at least from America. Mm-hmm. And it talks about her being kind of like deeply disenchanted with her life, being married with children. And she has essentially like three men in her life. Her husband, who is this staid kind of traditional Southern aristocratic gentleman who she's very bored by. This one guy who's kind of like a philanderer, ladies man who kind of sexually awakens her, but doesn't, you know, hold her interest for very long. And then what's seen as kind of like the, you know, the kind of the one for her. And she, you know, a different and there's also different women. There's like one woman in her life that's like urging her to like, you know, recommit to her married life and to her life as children, her life with her children, and kind of find the happiness in that and kind of like hold the societal norm. And then there's another elderly woman who lives by herself, and she's like this brilliant pianist and composer, and she's kind of like the ideal of like what the heroine might be if she rejects society and kind of like, you know,
it's a real Goldilocks situation.
Yeah, well, but also this woman's like, I guess you'd call her spinsters. Like she's kind of rejected all male attention too. That's like the way she achieved her intellectual and financial freedom. Mm-hmm. And then she's got this other one, the one for her. So like the novel has an unhappy ending in that the one kind of for her. This reminds me of a Prelude to a Kiss, where this guy who's like, you know, this great guy, and she's madly in love with him, is just too decent. And he writes her this note. It's like, I can't possibly, you know, besmirch your honor by getting, you know, involved in this, you know, adulterous relationship. And he mm-hmm. goes away, never to come back. And she ends up committing suicide at the spot that they first met. Okay. I thought it's interesting that there is already like I feel like two guys are kind of fitting in these archetypes. Like Daniel is her husband that maybe she tried to escape from, and Eric mm-hmm. is the dashing you know, brooding romantic. I haven't seen the third guy who might, you know, like if trying to suggest it is like going to be the one for her, or maybe it's just the basic themes of this novel, you know, women's empowerment and emancipation. It's just thematic, but also the fact that like what was the English woman,
Mrs. Wilson
kind of sort of reminds me of the character. I mean, she's not a like a traditional housewife who's like, oh, you should be, but she's kind of like, her business is enslaving women. I thought it was interesting that there's mm-hmm. like kind of like these archetypes in 1899. Like I said, I don't know if it has any predictive value. I'm not saying that poor Maura is going to offer herself at the end of this, but I said I'd look into it. I looked into it.
Okay. Yeah. And there is definitely a theme of feminism running through this show. So it could just be thematic, but I don't know. I'm looking for Goldilocks situations. We'll see.
Yeah, and 1899, I thought, you know, of it all was pretty interesting as well.
And it fits in with, like, the idea of a triangle, right, with three points, and the idea of these sister ships where there are three of them. There's a odd symmetry within the concept of a three.
Yeah. I started also because on the cover of the book, the date it's publishing is given in, like, Latin. So it's like MD... CCCXCIX or whatever, and like there's four mm-hmm. symbols that represent that, and I'm like, that map and the up down left right, and I'm now mm-hmm. no I'm not
this
going
is where
to,
your
I'm
brain melts out of your ears. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was also trying to make like some kind of numeric thing work with the 1899 and the 1011 and 1019, and if there mm-hmm. that wasn't really working either.
okay
so that's what I'm bringing. You get what do you have anything else?
I have, let's say, observations that are not my own, but are very interesting in the context of this final moment of the season with the quote-unquote simulation being revealed and we see we're on a spaceship and all this stuff, and some interesting stuff happens. You know, she gets this message about Project Prometheus, but there's a very strange shot at the very end where she's looking out the window, or she's looking at the console rather, and the camera zooms in on her and kind of rotates and then goes into her eye. And in that moment, you can see that her pupils are triangles, which if you look at the other moments in the show where that was the case, where people had triangular pupils, it was inside of the simulation, which is saying to a lot of people, and I think me as well, I think I might buy into this, that we are still in a simulation in 2099.
Is it in? Okay. Because my recollection of the triangle eyes is they were always showed right as someone is transitioning out of a dream or a flashback back into the simulation. Mm-hmm. Does that add any kind of new wrinkle to the whole deal?
Well, we, as best I can tell, never see them in a real world scenario, right? So I don't know. It is interesting, though, that, like, you know, this Project Prometheus destination is very similar to the destination of the ship in 1899, to the actual Prometheus. And I don't know, because if we're still in a simulation in 2099, the technology could just be a representation of whatever procedure is happening to these people, right? Like, just like the injections in 1899 are. These pods that they're in might not be physical pods at all. They could just be a representation of the procedure that they're undergoing in the quote unquote real world.
Right.
If there ever is a real world, it's quite possible that, like, the show is going to say there is no such thing as reality. And you can go down that rabbit hole forever. You can peel away every layer of the onion there is and find yet another layer of onion.
Yeah, we talked about that, the idea that, like, if the second that you invent a technology, a simulated technology that within it is indistinguishable from the real world, that, like, the odds of you being in the prime world just dropped almost nothing. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would be okay with living in a simulation. The problem that they interject in shows like this is, like, the person running simulation is fucking with the people in some way.
Sure.
Like, you know, like, I guess I would have a problem living in a simulation if all of a sudden the sky started rolling up or Black Pyramid started judging out of the ground every 6 days if I didn't do something right. You know, it's like that's but then I guess if they rebooted every 6 days, I would never even know.
Sure.
Here's a thought I had when I was thinking about this. I read this book earlier this year called The Player of Games by Ian M. Banks. This culture that doesn't have a prison, it doesn't have prisons, they don't have any kind of, like, justice system. What they do is when people commit crimes, they throw them in what this thing called the Labyrinth, which is described as this, like, really sophisticated simulation game theory system where a person walks through these, like, seemingly endless tunnels, and at certain junctions they are presented with, like, a ethical or moral dilemma. They don't really describe it in detail, but it's like you're presented with a really seeming, like, maybe it's a trolley problem where you got to pull a switch and save a child, or not pull a switch and let somebody, something like that. And if you do it correctly, as deemed by the society, you get closer to the exit of the labyrinth. And if you do it wrong, you go deeper within the lair. And the idea is, like, you know, if someone is wrongly imprisoned, if they're like an innocent, righteous person, you can literally walk out of the labyrinth in, like, a matter of hours. You just keep making the consistently right moral choices, and the labyrinth is like, oh, this is a good person, and they let them go. Whereas a person who's, like, dyed in the wool, evil or malicious or malignant is always going to continually make the wrong choice and go deeper and deeper within until they, you know, morally atone for their sins. I wonder if they are maybe playing, because, like, every one of these people has some kind of deep, dark secret that they've done that they're ashamed of, maybe right or wrong. And I wonder, like, the idea, I don't know how much is real, because, like, the idea of, like, what if this is, like, some kind of Australia situation where they're sending, like, shipfuls of convicts to a new world, and they're using the simulation to kind of turn them into solid citizens by the time they arrive there.
Sure, could be. It all feels much more personal than that, but I'm not sure if it has to be. And they could be messing around with what they're showing us, right? A lot of people are saying, like, oh, they're showing us fragments of all these different iterations of the run that they're doing through the simulation. Right. So this is not all just one clear linear path through it. I've heard possible explanations that, like, this is one of the character simulations, but everybody else is running their own simulation in their own little world, and they're all cordoned off, and all of the people that we see who are, you know, on the ship are just like just pure simulations. They're not even people.
Oh, see, because
Mara is the only one experiencing a simulation, and it lines up in a weird way, because there are glitches in this thing that tell you something is not quite as it seems. Like, everybody drinking tea except for Mara at the exact same time is fucking weird. You know, Lucian freezing up in front of Jerome, freezing up in front of him for a second before his simulation like kicks in. All that stuff is weird, right? It says like, maybe they are like the main players in their own world filled with NPCs.
Well, and the other thing is, like, the NPCs are NPCs to your instance, but they're also real people connected.
Yes.
So instead of, like, instead of simulating a complete person from scratch, why not take the base construct from another person's simulation and populate each other's worlds with those? So they're not really the prime instance, but they're, you know, they're based on these real people.
We see that there are a ton of passengers on this thing, right? That this ship, right. Prometheus, it's not just Mara and her small group of player characters. It's
right.
Pod after pod. There are like 50 of these pods or something filled with people. Right.
And I like it because, like, you got this Kerberos or Cerebus ship name that's named after these hounds of hell that literally guard the gates of hell to keep people from escaping. And then the other ship's Prometheus, which is a god that's been doomed to suffer eternally for a sin that he committed. And it's like that ties in really well with like a prison ship. The thing that I don't like about it is it doesn't feel very Bo Baron Freyja to reveal the true state of the world in the season one finale.
Oh, absolutely. Like, whatever we think we know right now is not going to be true. It's going to have an extra layer that we couldn't have possibly foreseen in the next season.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't have nearly enough information to make educated guesses as to the true nature of this. I will say there are only so many ways to induce a fantasy on the human brain, though, and it kind of has to be in one of those categories. You have technological, right, which is like a simulation, computer-induced simulation. You have chemical, which is like a drug-induced fantasy. Mm-hmm. You have methodical, I guess, which is what I would call it, which is like hypnosis, where nothing is really being put into the brain that's artificial, but you are getting someone into a state of trance-like existence. There's like natural and supernatural. And natural is like dreams. I guess like a near-death experience might count as that. And then supernatural is just shit we don't understand. Aliens, magic. If they're going down that
almost
route,
every one of those things is represented, because there is that, remember that newspaper that's in the first episode that talks about hypnotism, and you've got pharmacological, injecting white stuff, black stuff.
Got the simulation in 2099.
You got simulations, obviously. You got people waking up from dreams and everything except for aliens or supernatural.
Right. Or straight up magic, yeah.
Has been represented. And
and I don't think they're going to go with supernatural. Although they went with the time travel stuff. Like, just, I mean, time travel as we understand it is not really possible. But they did that in Dark. So maybe they're going to go with something actually supernatural here. I don't know.
Yeah. The other theory that I saw that I kind of liked is, you know, have you played any of the Assassin's Creed games?
I'm vaguely familiar with the concept there with the,
I played the
Animus
first couple.
Or whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you've got this Animus where it's this simulation where you find an ancestor that has this genetic memory of a person that you want to go back in time and explore their life to uncover some secret or whatever. I didn't play enough of the games to see where the overall arc of the story is going. But like, you can ostensibly discover something that you need in the present. You go and delve through these genetic memories of people. They're encoded in their DNA somehow. It's an epigenetic memory. Whoa. Is it possible that something actually did happen on these ships in 1899 that is supernatural? These black crystal structures taken over? Because, like, I guess the Bermuda Triangle is a supernatural thing. Mm-hmm. And you've got this black crystalline structure that's taking over. Is it possible? Because are you familiar with the SCP series?
Vaguely.
The secure, contain, protect. It's this Wikipedia of essentially amateur horror writing. Mm-hmm. So, like, is there something that was discovered in 1899 on these ships, this black crystalline structure that started taking it over, that some kind of, like, you know, turn of the century SCP started studying, and in our time it is like taking over the world? Maybe it has taken over the world. Maybe they are on a starship and they're fleeing, and this stuff is pursuing, or so it's a problem, and they're going back to try to, like, in this Assassin's Creed way, investigate what actually happened to get information on how to defeat it in our time.
It's possible. I'm looking at the triangle eyes, and I'm starting to doubt that the simulation stuff is at all relevant, like, to the ultimate. I mean, it'll be relevant thematically, right? But I don't think we're actually in 2099. I don't think that, like, everybody is inside of a simulation on a spaceship that's going to the center of the universe to investigate, like, the creation event. That is kind of thrown into flux with that triangle pupil stuff that's happening. And maybe that triangle stuff is just thematic. I don't know, but seems indicative of being in a simulation.
I do think the 2099 stuff is, I think it's got to be related to real space in some way, because I think it's too irresistible to not have a 1999 context as well.
Sure.
And, like, when I look and see, it's like you got this 1899 context where everything's in period piece, Titanic clothing. And then you've got, like, when Mora and Daniel are trying to cure Elliot or whatever, and they're putting him in the simulation. They're wearing these kind of, like, jumpsuits. I could buy that being in 1999. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, I believe it's like that, like, you can't really do time travel. Even in Dark, there was a lot of restrictions on how you and when you could travel to time, and you're always kind of restricted to these particular, like, 33-year cycles and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm getting at is, like, I think there's got to be some kind of reality to the 2099 project, because I don't think you could, if something is, like, rooted in 1999, I don't think you could project 100 years forward. You could always look back 100 years. But, like, if we're in a 2099 time period, I always think it's like, well, then that must be at some level prime, or maybe there's a 2199 time period that's even more advanced where they're actually on an alien world or something. But does any of that make sense? Is that tracking, or am I just babbling?
So what I gather from that is you're saying that, like, our predictions of what future tech is going to look like are so flawed. And we've seen time and time again, like, if you look at Back to the Future, they said that, what, 2015 was going to be hover cars and self-lacing shoes, which we have self-lacing shoes. It was going to be, you know, tube arm jackets that resize automatically and all that stuff. Mr. Fusion, right? Like,
right.
And they were just colossally wrong. And basically every movie that ever tries it is colossally wrong. Yeah. Is that what you're getting at?
No, I was getting at the, like, that if they're... What would be the point of simulating some crazy future thing? And the idea that, like, you couldn't... I don't know. Maybe I'm not making a lot of sense. I wasn't thinking... if you tell me in 2099 we're going to have a generational starship that's going off, I would say, no, we're not. Like, it seems like our rate of actual technological progress in that kind of way, it's like our technological progress is continuing to be made, but it's not being made in the way that we thought, like, in the 50s, where it's like, oh my god, we invented airplanes like 30 years ago, and 15 years from now we're going to land on the fucking moon, like, we're going to be colonizing, we're going to be living on the moon by 2032, babe. No, the fuck we're not. In 60-70 years, there's no way we're gonna have a generational starship. I'm going to confidently predict that knowing that I'll be dead.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I would literally rise from the grave and eat my hat if we are have some kind of generational starship bound to a far flung star in 2099. So, yeah, like I from that standpoint, I think the Bo Baron and Freja are. Yeah, there's no way they're predicting. but it's more of like I was thinking that, yeah, you couldn't. I was thinking like you couldn't time travel, but you could always simulate some bullshit sci-fi. But I just don't know why you would.
Gotcha.
I don't know why you would send someone back to 1899 either.
Sure.
It's all very confusing. What else you got?
I think that's about it as far as like original thoughts that I had based on stuff I read. I'm really curious to see what the feedback is all about. But do you have anything else?
No, I was a little brokenhearted that our friend Kim Renfro, who did brilliant analysis on Dark, was sidelined by jury duty for the last 3 weeks. So she hasn't gotten any of her fabulous articles. I would just encourage you to Google Kim Renfro. The first link will be her Insider archive. I imagine because she mentioned on Twitter that she's actively working her way through the series and writing that article. If you want to see kind of like a definitive take or, you know, a really good roundup of theories and things you missed and things you would be good to note, check out her work, because I'm sure before the end of the year, she'll probably have that out. But yeah.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
And now, back with more Bald Move.
Let's move on to our feedback, because we got a bit of it. RCM is up first. He goes, you mentioned the wolf on the ship and a guy prepping for vampire or werewolf. Dracula was published in 1897. In the story, while on the Demeter, a ship, Dracula kills the crew one by one. When the ship docks with a dead crew and a captain tied to the wheel, it's reported that a wolf or a large dog leaped from the ship and to the docks and ran away. The book was published a couple years before 1899. That might explain the crew member's reaction. I don't know what to make of the Below Decks crew and their garlic wreaths and whatnot. That's another, you guys, we talked about like the five ways you can fool someone's senses in Supernatural. That's another hint towards the supernatural.
I really have no read on the werewolf garlic stuff.
Yeah. I think about Dracula is like, it's werewolves and vampires are a long standing part of European folklore. It's not like Bram Stoker invented it. In fact, he like romanticized and gothicized it all. But, you know, these were existing things. But it would be that would be why, I guess, the garlic and things like that would be at the forefront of the crew members' minds. Scott says, I noticed at the very end that the date displayed in Starship is October 19th, which is 8 days after October 11th, which is Mara's, you know, 10-1-1, okay. which is Mara's room number on the ship.
And coincidentally, 8 days is the voyage duration.
Yep. Coincidentally, the ship's journey is supposed to last 8 days. I'm taking this as a sign that we've successfully moved from the first simulation to another. Would love to hear your thoughts.
I'm this with you. The triangle eyes and that date thing. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's kind of blew my mind that, like, maybe we are, if not out of into the real world, we have moved definitively from one cycle to the next. Mm-hmm. We've gone the journey of the birth. But I don't know that I buy that, because number one, would people be up for just abandoning the 1899 concept? Like, if there's no, you know, if everybody's in dark jumpsuits and rebreather masks and stuff, like, does some of the charm of the series get lost? How do you have the confused languages?
I'm excited about the possibility of it being more, let's say, aesthetically science fiction, but sure, I imagine some people are way in for the 1899 voyage stuff.
Like in Dark, as they went through, as you found out more and more of the time, there was like all these constant like races to go, you know, like bring future technology to the past so that you can engineer. And there's reasons to go back and forth to the different realities and to try to desperately change something. With simulations, you don't have that. So like if you were on phase two of the simulation, which is 2099, why would you ever tunnel back to the 1899 simulation? And would that even be, what does that even mean to do that from within the simulation?
Yeah, I don't know. Could it be that each, so they talk about iterations, right? Like this is the farthest we've got, is something that Daniel says to Elliot. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that each simulation is a different voyage, different setting? It's not always on the, I know that doesn't make a lot of sense with like the ship graveyard, but the ship graveyard could be representative, not literal, right? It could be that like you're seeing ships because you're in the ship, the 1899 ship variant of the simulation. Whereas if you were in the 2099 version, you'd see a whole bunch of starships, just, you know, graveyard in space. And maybe the third possible simulation is going to be some other kind of ship. Maybe they're going to be on the Hindenburg, right before that goes down or something. Who knows?
I guess the only problem I have with that is the idea that they didn't complete shit. Daniel hacked and changed the premise of the simulation to get them out of that phase. Mm-hmm. So whatever they were supposed to do in 1899, they did not accomplish those goals.
No. I agree.
I don't know what it means if you cheat the first simulation to get into the second simulation. And there's just so much unfinished business back in 1899. If any of this stuff is in fact real, which is we'll explore in another email. Eric from Massachusetts says, here's my theory. All this is a training exercise akin to Morpheus teaching Neo Kung Fu. The real space travelers are plugged into a brain simulator and provided fake traumatic backstories. They are thrust into the simulation where they grow and develop new skills, both individually and collectively. This is to prepare them for whatever they're supposed to do in the starship's rise at the destination. The training that results will carry over to the real psychology. I think none of the material with Henry is actually true, but part of Mara's traumatic backstory. Daniel and Elliot are agents of the training simulation with the goal of aiding and or obstructing the other participants and maximizing their learning opportunities. I do think the starship is the base level and represents some mission critical to the future of humanity, an ark ship or something similar. Okay. I like this theory, except for the final paragraph, which is, oh yeah, this is the true reality, and it's season one of probably a 3 or 4 season show, and we've been exposed to the prime reality.
Unlikely.
It is unlikely, because then, like, why would she go back into the simulation? Is there going to be like a scene from the main, like if like the start of next season is like some kind of big spider comes in and grabs her by the neck and shoves her back into the pod, like out of the Matrix, or does she like realize that she's got to go back in to free other minds? Does someone inject her with the black shit to make her forget all over again? Because that's the other thing, is like, whatever progress any character makes can be negated at any time with the goddamn black injections. Because I think that's the other thing I learned by, you know, kind of reading other people's takes on Reddit and the different, you know, on Vulture and Decider and all that kind of stuff, is it seems like there's a pretty clear pattern of the black thing puts you under and makes you forget, and the white syringe brings you out and unlocks your memories. Very White Rabbit, you know, one pill does one thing and the other pill does the opposite thing.
I don't want to just take that at face value either. I want to make sure there's something concrete that I can latch onto to say that that's true, because I was noticing that too. I rewatched the finale and it happens like three times in the finale. For Elliot, for Mara, and there is a discrepancy, but it's always explained by Maester Qyburn, which kills me. I can't trust anything that he says. I really don't. So I don't know. And it might turn out that he's the good guy and he's been telling the truth all along, but
could be.
Boy, yeah, he's a tough guy to believe just on the face of it.
Yeah, that'd be another, because like they have to cast this guy knowing that he looks somewhat sinister.
Oh, yeah. You know? I mean, that's like his whole job is to look sinister. Been,
so far, everything his entire body of work is he is an insane citadel maester that tortures people and reanimates the dead. Mm-hmm. He is a cunning, ruthless imperial security officer cracking down on a nascent rebellion. Mm-hmm. And he is this dude walking around in, again, what looks like evil imperial pajamas, oppressing his daughter and doing a bunch of dirty things. It would be an interesting inversion of his kind of like menacing grandfather act to make him actually be the good guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Mora might be going that is way. The bad guy. Yeah. God, they remind me of. I felt like there's another thing that does jog my memory of something else I read about, maybe it'll jog back. Alina says, I watched the dub version of the show where every character is speaking in English because I found it distracting to question how Danish Crestor could speak the Spanish Angel or how Chinese Ling Yi could understand the French Lucien. However, the Apple TV version of Netflix didn't have the English dubbed option available. Do you think there's any content lost to the dub version watchers, and would you watch a dubbed version? I'm almost certain that if you have a close watch of this season and you pay attention to who can understand what, that it means something. Because it also felt... Didn't we agree that it felt like in the middle of the season it seemed like people were understanding each other that was impossible, but then suddenly in the last two episodes we snap back to like it being a plot point of people not being able to understand each other.
I didn't watch it dubbed. I watched it with subtitles and the native languages. How do they handle the scenes where they specifically say, can someone tell me what they're talking about, or
I don't understand
that language, please someone help me? Do the people just dub that, and then are you supposed to keep in your mind that these people are not all English or native English speakers? Yeah, that seems to confuse the issue even more. I would not recommend that.
Do they just use ridiculous accents? Like, Jerome's like, oh, and I'm not going to do any, Asian characters, but, I don't know. Cause like, I got a confession in Dark. I did watch the dub version. Like I was like a couple episodes in and I'm like, I am so, cause it is such a dense show and there's so many subtitles. That like, cause I almost watch subtitles with everything. It's just so much more convenient when you're watching things critically to like not have to worry about what did they say and all that kind of stuff. But it was so distracting and there's so much happening on the screen that I found it very hard to split my eyes between reading and watching. So I just, at some point, even though I knew it was a worse experience overall, I just switched it to the English dub and said, fuck it. I didn't do that this time.
Yeah. Dark didn't rely on characters not being able to understand each other either.
True. So everybody was essentially speaking the same language.
That seems like a bizarre experience, but
if you're feeling bad about missing something, like I think you are probably missing something, but I also don't think that this series will hinge on a French person not understanding a Polish person or vice versa. And if you miss that, you've just missed everything. Like, no, at best, this is the very leading edge of a first step of a Martin three-step reveal. And that you'll get caught up on step two or three eventually. But if you want to be probably at the bleeding edge, you probably should watch it as the creators intended it, you know? Everett says, Aaron, I know how much you absolutely love your biblical parallels on modern television. Here's one I felt like I was picking up on. Once the mutiny began and Captain Ike was, I called him Eric before, fuck. Ike was captured and thrown into his storage room along with Jerome and Ramiro. Became the first instance, as far as I know, where a group of people found themselves in quite a pickle while also all speaking different languages. And then it clicked. Much like the story of Prometheus is one that highlights a punishment handed down for disobeying the gods, so is the story of the Tower of Babel. If there is indeed any there, who are the gods in this case? It's suggested that Mara is the creator of the simulation, and so is she God in this circumstance? Are all the people trapped on the Prometheus, aka the Ship of Babel, people who have wronged her in the past and have been put into the simulation as punishment? What do you think of the Tower? Because, if you don't know, the Tower of Babel is the story in Genesis where mankind, pretty close to the fall in the Garden of Eden, were nevertheless all kind of united in one area of the globe, and they all spoke the same language. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know what? Let's invent bricks and mortar, and let's make a tower tall enough to reach into the heavens so we can be closer to God.
And they got 40 feet up. God's like, nah, too close.
That's the thing. God, you'd think he'd look down at his children, see them playing well together and be like, oh, that's nice. They want to be closer to dad. He's like, fuck this. If we let them build a tower to the heavens, they could accomplish anything. Dude. Go down there, confuse their language, set them against each other. And that's how we want to be. That's the when we Yahweh does not truck with gentle parenting.
At which God stepped in and said, that's too high is comical to me. Like
what? Right.
Knowing what we know about you couldn't build a tower. You can't build a tower high enough to reach God. It's not physically possible. No matter where he resides. B, it's like looking at your child's blocks when they're building it with the alphabet on them and saying, this kid's going to build a fucking tower to the ceiling and it's going to crash through the roof. And he stacked two blocks and you're like, fuck you. And you smash him.
Yeah.
That's what God does in that.
Like there's illustrations from antiquity of this event. And it's always like some big ziggurat. And it's like, you can tell it's like 400, maybe 500 feet tall, just based on the scale of the arches and the steps and structures. And nevertheless, the top is like in the clouds. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. You built it on a foggy day, guys. Settle down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild.
But I mean, it is something. It is an interesting because there's, I think, several points where like there probably wouldn't be as big a problem if everyone could speak the same language. And you do have like Moira is depicted as somewhat a vengeful god she's depicted as a god in several instances. She's referred to as the creator. And if you believe Henry's side of the story, her father, this is some kind of petulant act that she's done, a selfish thing. Like she can't let go of the death or the impending death of her boy. So she somehow trapped them all in this simulation as a way to continue to keep them all together.
She trapped herself too. That's the puzzling thing is she is as much a part of this whole mystery as they are. I don't buy that. I don't know why a god would trap themselves in the same state as whoever they're trying to ensnare here.
If they can't, because I think that Mara's perfect world is got the one that's got Elliot in it all the time, so she wouldn't have any problem being trapped in there. Now
why not give herself the memories of the outside world so she can experience being with her child?
Well, I think that's where Kieran, her brother, and Henry come in, because whatever Mara intended to do has been corrupted by one or both of those.
Seems
and maybe
like,
Daniel
yeah.
too, because mm-hmm. she's obviously been injected and re-injected and
maybe she created a place for Elliot to go and be a simulation where she could experience him with the full knowledge that he's a simulation. But at some point, her father trapped her in there without that knowledge, like sent her into her own simulation as punishment.
Because his stated goal is to make sure she stays trapped in here forever because fuck my daughter, apparently. He's not also into gentle parenting.
No, no. He's coming crashing through the door, kicking your blocks over.
You're building a tower. It reaches my knees. What's next, Mora? It's knee high. All right. Evan says, I had some initial disappointment by the Starship ending. I think it's because I was excited for a trippy turn of the century period piece, but apparently season two will be taking place in a voyage to the Andromeda system. What? How much of the season two do you think will be in 1899? And do any of their backstories mean anything? I was intrigued by a number of them. This is the big, I guess, potential problem. Yeah. The fact that like everyone is an unreliable narrator and has been so throughout the whole of season one. But I think there's a tension there. Because you can do that as a show creator, but like it's not super satisfying. And if like literally all the information we learned about these characters is a lie, I don't know why I'm watching the show. I don't know how clever the show has to be to justify me continuing to invest in the characters. Yeah. So like I think that that's a fear people can have. But unless Bo Odar and Freyja are just complete morons that don't respect their audience, which I do not believe, I think that some of this stuff has to have at least a grain of truth to it, right?
Yeah, and it could be thematic. Like maybe these characters, the sins that we see them having committed or the traumas they've experienced in this like weird 1899 period didn't actually happen in 1899, but they have a rough analog in some other time period where they did happen. Like things that are akin to those events happened to them at some point.
Like Ling just betrayed her best friend / maybe sister.
Yeah,
but
just maybe it wasn't in 1899.
Yeah, Lucien screwed over Jerome, but not in the French Legion. Very similar.
So we have been learning things about them, just not in the exact realities that we expected.
Which that's so like if all of these are essentially parables that tie back to their real lives, because like that's the thing. It's like I just don't, if their motivations and emotional cores are all abstract and arbitrary, I don't know what kind of show that is I'd be watching.
Yeah. At some point we got to have something to grasp onto and say, this is real. Or that could be the point of the show. Is like,
it's true.
How are you grasping onto your daily life and saying this is real when you have no evidence, you know?
But how much of season two do you think will be in 1899? If I'm going and using Dark as a guide, which increasingly I'm not sure if this is the right way to go, but then they keep baiting it by, you know, having 1899, 2099, and like, mm-hmm. like all these kind of like sicilical events. I imagine 1899 will still be a thing because there will probably be people that are still trapped in the simulation that not everyone got out. Like Mara is the only one that had the key to the pyramid. And oh, that was the other thing from the I don't think I mentioned that I got from a Reddit thread is the idea that part of the hacking that Daniel did was to reverse the code of what the black and the white things did. So when they injected Mara.
See, this
with
is why I didn't want to trust that. Yeah.
The last black thing that like that is that the code has been inverted so that now that triggered her memory. She's the only one affected by this. Everyone else is still asleep. She might need to and are stranded back there. If she cares for these people, and she's got to care about like, you know, Daniel and Ike and Elliot, she'll have to go back to try to coax them out of it. And we talk about how you can't just run up to people and be like, wake up, you're in a simulation. Like, you know, that's if it was that easy, Daniel would do it. You have to do it very carefully or else you'll lock the person even more into the mental prison. You'll just seem like a stark raving person and they'll throw you in jail and throw you into the brig. And then what? So like that might be interesting. But I think like in Dark, there is essentially two time periods that then turned into three and then turned into, you know, like I don't want to spoil it, but like, as each season went on, you always had the prime periods that were still important to the plot, but you spent less and less time in them and more time in some and the other. So like I think this new 2099 will be a major setting, but the 1899s might not completely go away. And I imagine there'll be other settings that will kind of like spin around through in some kind of like vomit inducing, brain melting way.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
Except you like vomiting in this case.
Okay.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. And now, back with more Bald Move. Michelle says, just a quick thought that came to me as my boyfriend and I watched episode 4. While we are unsure what purpose the Beatles serve, unsure of what purpose the Beatles serves at this point. It seems like people's lives are the price of using the Beatles' powers. I cannot remember if Daniel the little boy used the Beatle prior to anyone dying on the boat, but I believe when Ada was killed, it was the first time. Then Daniel and the boy continue to use them as the bodies continue to pile up. I don't know, because like at some point the bodies stop piling up. And they keep using the Beatle. But also, there's like a shitload. I mean, you're only on episode 4, but like there's a shit people that the shit ton of people that die in between, you know, and, you know, when they start just jumping over the railings, etc. So like maybe. But I don't know. And also within a simulate, like that makes sense in kind of like a Full Metal Alchemist, like, you know, life pays for life kind of way. But like, what does that mean in a simulation that you got to kill a simulated person to power up this beetle? But it's just
don't have the cycles.
Yeah, it's a scarab beetle, though, which is like kind of important in the Egyptian kind of like death cosmology. But it's also the symbol of the sun. I don't know.
Jamie says, the spooky spaceship is giving me Event Horizon and or Alien vibes. What's your feeling about sprinkling some space horror into the show?
Yes, please. Yeah, that sounds great. I love that stuff. So, sure.
Yeah, especially if there is something to this triangle matter that's taking over the starship and they're doing some kind of simulation to figure out how to stop it. Like that would be... And like I said, that the other thing about that we notice in the late season Black Pyramid crap is it starts off acting like salt crystals where it's growing and lengthening and stuff like that. But by the end of it, it's flexing around and acting much more like those protuberances and like the abyss. It's acting in much more a fluid kind of like alien nanite AI thing. So it could be that we're going to have like some kind of horrible, horrifying nanite type of thing that's a menace. But yeah, I could get down some space horror. She also asked, what character trauma flashback story did you find the most interesting? Which character do you hope we find out more about in the next season?
I want to know what's going on with Olek. Because his is weird. He's in a vat of oil.
Oilek.
Yeah, he comes out of his oil bath and just kind of walks into the simulation. That's what I want to know about. What happened
he's
there?
He's one of the only like big major named characters where we don't understand the source of her trauma. I guess it's not Smith. Jesus Christ.
Wilson.
Miss Wilson is another one that we don't really understand her.
Uh-huh. I've heard it speculated that Olek's thing is he murdered his brother in the oil and he's now going to America and he's talking about his brother being in America, but that's not literal. It's somehow like figurative. I don't know. Not sure I buy it, but yeah, I want to know more about him.
As far as the character we hope to find out in the next season, I think the first mate, Sebastian, he's the most mysterious character because everyone else has like, I guess I want to separate people in like the movers and the manipulated, manipulators. Mm-hmm. And so like some people have agency in the story, like Mara,
Henry.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Seekers and avoiders. And the other people are kind of along for the ride. Sebastian is kind of the only one, like everyone else has an obvious motivation. Like there's a father who's trying to punish his daughter. There's a daughter who's trying to save her son. There's a husband who's trying to save his wife. And they all have like, and there's a brother that's kind of manipulating everything. They all have reasons for doing, but like, who the fuck is Sebastian?
Mm-hmm.
And why? Why is he so loyal to Henry? Why is he like, you know, doing all this? We know nothing about this guy.
Yeah.
And he's the only of the, I guess, seeker class that I can say that about. So I would like to know more. There's a couple theories that maybe he is Kieran, her brother, like the manifestation of him.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Also, like, oh, there's another theory. I'm going to look up this and make sure. Yeah, okay. Kieran is an Irish name that means little dark one or little dark haired one. And there was an interesting theory that like it's one of the things that's like the bane of me as a theory collector is people that just take something interesting and says what if, but they don't connect it to anything. And they're like, what if Mara's brother is actually her son? Because, you know, Elliot could be fairly described as a little dark haired boy.
Sure.
So it's like a code name,
or why are all the pictures lying to her? Why is Daniel lying to her? Why?
Well, but it could be in like some kind of time. You'd have to mix time travel. You have to mix a little dark into your 1899 palette.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, it's a thing that they do that like she could marry her dad, or at least procreate with him and make her brother son. I don't know.
Yeah, the thing that kills me about all these theories.
But, yeah, like,
unifying theory, right? Yeah, like, exactly, there is no grand unifying theory. All these seem like somewhat mutually exclusive, at least.
Yes.
And some of them are just like, well, if this theory is true, there's no possible way that one's true.
Right. And it's hard to it's hard if you, because like, yeah, and they haven't given any hints that there is actually time travel. It's all been just simulation so far. So,
yep.
Sai says, here is my theory. Mara is in an induced coma-like state. She must have placed herself in this after some sort of trauma, and this is why she's called the Creator. Her father and her brother have been trying to find a way to wake her up and must have found technology similar to the one in Tarsem Singh's The Cell. Do you know that movie? The Jennifer Lopez movie? It's about...
I've seen it. I've got it. I don't remember it. It was decades ago.
I did that, and they didn't elaborate, so because I'd seen it decades ago, too, and I looked it up. And so in that movie, Jennifer Lopez plays a psychologist that's invented this technology that allows her to enter the brain of a comatose patient and essentially coax their subconscious back to their conscious and wake them up. And the main plot of the movie is the police bring her in to go into the mind of a serial killer who traps their... He traps his victims in this tank that slowly fills with water over the course of several days and kills them. And he has succumbed. He has gone into a coma with one of his last victims in a tank. And the police are desperate to find and save that person. So Jennifer Lopez has to go into this guy's brain to try to see if she can find out where that information is. So that's just like he's the same. It's the same type of technology that you've got someone that's either psychologically or physiologically traumatized and their brain is in a locked state and you go in there to get him out. So anyway, her husband and son, all in quotation marks, have been trying to wake her up by introducing themselves into her brain where she's been elaborately constructed a world to hide herself from the real world using similar technology. They mentioned that they've never been able to get to this level in the beginning episodes, and they were unable to find their way to get in touch with her, and the archive is filled with their failed attempts to do so. This could also be a reason why we never see her father worried whenever Daniel or Elliot make some kind of progress, and he only reacts once we see that Daniel is doing something that he is not supposed to do. And this would be the place where her brother took over as her father couldn't stop Daniel. All the people we've seen involved must... been people she knew in her real life and are involved in the same way that people we know in real life are involved in our dreams. Whatever progress we think that they've achieved from getting to 2099 to 1899 is nothing but the first layer of the world she's closed herself into. And all our simulations start with her receiving some message from her brother, just like she did at the end. So I guess what's the predictive value of this theory? Because the other thing is like, her brother and father don't seem... Well, I guess he says that it's the husband and the son that are the ones interested in trying to unlock her from this.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Because I was going to say that the Henry wants to keep her in there, apparently. Yeah. And this is all, like, speculation based on taking at face value what he says, as if he is a real person, as if this is not all some concoction of Mara's mind.
It bothers me that the show does things like have her see a note that says welcome to reality when she wakes on the starship. And the fact that I'm almost morally certain that's not reality.
But
1899 had tons of books that had may your coffee kick in before reality does. So.
And that's could kind of be the point of the show, right? Is that we can't know and we'll never know if this is actually our reality. Or if we're in some kind of elaborate simulation or dream state or whatever. I mean, that might just be the end thesis of the show is like none of that is knowable. And every time you think you've gotten to the heart of it, you haven't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't know if that makes a satisfying show, but it might make an interesting ride and a fun puzzle to solve.
Because that's the thing about all these philosophical things when you get into the Matrix and brain in the vat theories and Plato's cave theories is at the end of the day, I don't think there is like I'm not aware of. I'm not studied that much in the philosophy. But like I'm not aware of there's any like silver bullet to like, oh, here's proof that you're not in a simulation.
Mm-hmm.
Here's proof that you're not in Plato's cave. Just seeing being amused by pictures, taking it, you know, played before your face. You think that's your life and you think this is it's all. Like, I don't know that there's any defeater for that, which is why I haven't given, like, simulation theory a lot of thought because, like, well, fuck. Let's say I convert to simulation theory and that's my new religion. What does that mean? How do I live my life differently?
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like the if you believe in simulation theory, like, one valid interpretation is just, I don't know, like, fucking stop. Just stop doing anything. Just, like, you know, crawl into a shell and die or off yourself because what does anything even matter?
Sure. Or you can accept your reality and try and live in the most fulfilling way possible within it.
Right. Because even in simulation, there's things that make you happy and things that make you sad. Mm-hmm. Why not try to do things that make you feel happy and fulfilled and avoid things that make you feel sad and unfulfilled and, you know, keep doing that until you simulate to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whew. And then, if when you simulate a die, you wake up into another reality that is either a simulation or a reality, do the same in that one.
Mm-hmm.
Until the cycle ends, or maybe it never does, and you just continue to live your best life wherever possible.
Your best simulated life. And that's what we're going to urge you to do until we have season two of 1899. Live your best simulated
life.
Uh-huh. And try not to get triangles in your eyes.
Yeah, those hurt. They're spiky. They're pointy.
We'll be back when 1899 comes back. Of course, this is not the last thing that we're going to be doing here at Bald Move. We have got a whole December of Christmas fun lined up, mostly for our club members. There will be a review of Violent Night. It's coming out tonight if you're listening to this or maybe last night, depending on when our producer gets this out. And also, we're going to have a review of the new Avatar Blue Man Group movie in mid-December. And in January, oh boy, we're kicking off things in a big way with The Last of Us, the Craig Mazin project about fungus zombies. It's based on the award-winning and best-selling video game The Last of Us of the same name. Very excited about that. That's going to be a 9-episode run in early 2023, and then there's so much stuff in 2023. Hopefully you'll get Severance. That'd be nice. We're definitely going to get season two of Foundation. Definitely going to get season two of Yellow Jackets. There's just a lot of stuff that I'm looking forward to that's going to be returning. Probably
season three of Picard.
Season three of Picard is actually early in the year, right? That's in February. We just found out.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of pulpy goodness on Bald Move. The best way to follow along is where you're at, Bald Move Pulp. And you can follow us at Twitter, twitter.com/baldmove. If you do want to get in on the Christmas celebrations, get ad-free feeds and tons of other bonus fun content, go to support.baldmove.com. And if nothing else, we'll see you next year or in 2099 for the second season of 1899. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.